Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 72. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com.
Craig.
Hey.
We're super close to Star Wars. Which means we're going to keep talking about Star Wars because there's nothing else to talk about.
Fine with me.
Yeah. So I talked about The Phantom Menace with Matt, and you're going to be covering Revenge of the Sith with Graham.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves you and me to talk about what is my least favorite Star Wars movie. Well, maybe not theatrically released Star Wars movie, because there's that Clone Wars movie. But, it's Attack of the Clones, Episode 2, released in 2002. Right off the bat, I think what I have trouble with in this movie is it's one of the first movies that's shot entirely digitally, and it's also one of the first movies that is shot almost entirely on a soundstage with digital environments. And I think that this was 2 years before Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, which also kind of is a movie that's a movie I want to like, but when I watch it, it's hard because it's so fake. And then I feel like they figured out how to make it a little bit more vibrant and livable in Revenge of the Sith and even Sin City a few years after that. But in general, this is a format of filmmaking that the further we get away from it, the further we get away from like the dawn of it where it was like a huge thing, the less appealing it is to my eyes. So I feel like regardless of what you say about story or anything like that, visually, Attack of the Clones is probably my least favorite. So I totally didn't bury the lead there. Where are you at on Attack of the Clones?
I think I agree. It's been so long since I've seen Phantom Menace. It's just been a long time since I've seen that movie. But I think for all its kindergarten entertainment, I might actually prefer sitting through that type of thing than Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, for all the digital stuff going on in Phantom Menace, it was still shot on film, and they still had a few sets, you know.
Yeah, and I think Attack of the Clones, you know, I think the storyline is boring. I think there's just nothing. It's almost just like how can we show you this Jedi is actually a bad person in Count Dooku?
Yeah.
And it's a really, really boring game of chess, like a 100 move game of chess, and they're showing us moves like 47 through 60.
Yeah, and it's built like almost a detective story on one angle with Obi-Wan kind of investigating a missing planet, but it's not this ain't Dashiell Hammett, you know. The mystery is not very compelling. He doesn't seem like he's super smart, and you don't really know what's going on. And then they drop things about Sypha Dyas. Stuff that happened off screen, and I guess that works in The Big Sleep, you know, but it's not working here. When you're talking about these characters and these things that happen off screen, it doesn't really make an awful lot of sense. It feels like, I don't know, it feels like we're just kind of spinning our wheels until we get to basically the first two movies, and I don't think this is I think this is a pretty common opinion. The first two just seem to spin their wheels until Darth Vader is old enough to be Darth Vader.
Yeah, and then, and as Graham and I discussed last night, Revenge of the Sith, they hurry to tie things together, and it still feels long and boring and contrived. But with Attack of the Clones, Like, for instance, I feel like the explanation of why all these stormtroopers exist, they felt like was going to be a big thing, which is why they're having Count Dooku. Well, I guess he's doing a big droid army, right? So they're having all this huge army of clones.
Yeah.
And
somebody
like
orders
this,
a clone army, and then but Dooku is using the
droids that don't do anything. They're so easy to kill, and they don't really do a lot of damage. And then you get to this planet where it's raining constantly, and it's just an ocean, and it's just okay. Oh well, here's a bunch of the same looking person. I guess those are going to fill those stormtrooper suits for the next movies.
It just bugs me.
I don't know why. I don't really care. I guess it's just the whole thing to me lacks creativity. I don't know.
Yeah, there's very little stakes. There's very little drama. Again, it's not like there's a big conflict coming, so we need to get ready, or there's a big conflict coming and we don't need to get involved. You know, there's the stakes of it are so soft and explained in with such little immediacy that it's just like it's everybody's so sleepy and everything's so again, it extends to the visuals. Everything is soft and nothing is actually touching in this movie. It just feels like it's going through the motions and creating plot contrivances artificially for the sake of artificiality. The thing that I kind of am convinced of after Phantom Menace is that George Lucas just wasn't on board for these movies. Maybe he was more interested in the fact that, hey, I can make a movie without ever, you know, leaving a soundstage now. That's cool, but everything else is, I'm not that engaged in it. And I feel like that comes across in much of this movie. I will say, I like Ewan McGregor. I always like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. I think he's the crown jewel of the prequel trilogy. And I think that he's got a few good little, you know, adventure hero moments. I appreciate that they try to go for a Blade Runner homage with that big, you know, jet car chase on Coruscant. I like the fight with Jango Fett. But I really have to strain to see the great stuff there and ignore the annoyances, which again is, you know, it's just a bunch of digital noise and nothing is touching each, you know, things aren't touching one another. And it's just, there's no contact. The fights don't hit. And we haven't even talked about it yet, but the love story certainly doesn't hit. How are you on Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan?
Yeah. I mean, we have this idea of what Obi-Wan will become. That's the first thing we've seen of Obi-Wan. And I think from the beginning, his character, they don't try to do too much with his character, and they don't try to do too much with any character, really. And I think that's a flaw. But with Ewan McGregor, it works because we know what Obi-Wan Kenobi becomes. And he's not much of a shiny kind of guy. He's sort of humble and low-key. And Ewan McGregor plays that well in all three movies. We actually talked about his performance in Revenge of the Sith as well. Or we will talk about his performance in Revenge of the Sith. But yeah, I agree. You've got, and it's got to be a challenge because what you see is these other talented actors sucking. And so the ones that don't suck are obviously are up in their game, or at least trying to.
Yeah,
they're trying to give a good performance. I think one of the, I don't know, like you look at Star Wars, you look at Empire, even Return of the Jedi, all the originals. That time span happened over several years, right?
Right.
But each movie takes place in days. It's an episode. just as it calls itself. And I think that works. And I think I think they should have done a better job of doing that with the prequels. And maybe each of these movies take place over several days, but there's not enough on that storyboard to really pack it in. I know the Revenge of the Sith feels way too overpacked, but to me, like, if you're trying to show, you know, Count Dooku is like really, you know, going behind the backs of the good guys and, you know, trying to do some bad things, and Obi-Wan's finding out about this other army, and Anakin, and I mean, what's Anakin really doing? He's falling in love and he's protecting this woman. I mean, everybody has to have something going on their storyline for this all to work, and maybe only one of them does.
Yeah, we in the Phantom Menace episode, we talked about how really the only person that has a character arc in that movie is Jar Jar. And here, if you're talking about a character arc, really, I guess the only one is Amidala, you know, because she goes from being staunchly against, well, A, she goes from not even thinking about Annie to, you know, being in love with him, apparently, and then deciding to, you know, show that love. Anakin is basically the same character at the beginning as he is the end. He has a moment where he murders some people, but that doesn't seem to do an awful lot to him as a character.
Doesn't he say, I want to help people live or something afterwards, or is I want to protect people after he kills people?
Yeah,
which is
people.
Sand
lives matter.
Yeah.
That's fine. Let's just get into that love story. It is, that's another thing that makes this worse than Phantom Menace. I am embarrassed, you know, whenever Jake Lloyd performs as Anakin, but he's a kid. You know, I can't really, there's so many, most kid performances, you know, are kind of cringy. And then there's Jar Jar, and that's not fun. But at least those aren't, those are, I don't know, I feel like I can forgive those, that, you know, Jar Jar was a early development, and Jake Lloyd was not a great actor. Both of them, a lot of things went into those mistakes, you know what I mean? But the dialogue and performance of the love story in Attack of the Clones is far more cringe-inducing for me, because it's one guy writing the dialogue that should know better, and it's two performers looking at that dialogue and just saying, I refuse to bring anything to this. Like, we all know this is bad, and we're just going to leave it at that. Like, it's not, you know, it's not Ewan McGregor making it work, you know, despite knowing that he's not working with the best material, he's still putting his boots on and going to work. And I feel like Christensen and Portman are just like, no, like, if Lucas didn't do it, we're not going to do it. And nobody is really engaging with this material. And it's so bad. And some of those line deliveries, I mean, I blush just thinking about them, because it is physically painful to hear Hayden Christensen say, I don't like sand, or say, at least R2 is here to protect us. And it's, oh God, it just dies. It just dies on the screen. Is it nearly as painful for you?
Yeah. I think in that kind of spins over into the next movie. I think you summed it up well. There's really nothing to add. It's just sort of, it's cringe-inducing. I couldn't even call it a soap opera, because at least...
No, that's why I'm much less hard on Revenge of the Sith, because at least there, Padme is, like, fearful for her child dying, and Christensen is, like, screaming. Like, so it's still not good, necessarily, in the traditional sense, but at least they're doing something. And in here, they're just, like, staring at a green wall and saying whatever they memorized and thinking about oatmeal or mittens or, you know, they're just goldfish. There's nothing going on behind the eyes there.
So do you think it's lack of experience that for Christensen and Portman to just not really push back and say, give me more motivation?
Maybe.
Or something?
Yeah, maybe.
Because here's what's before Attack of the Clones for Portman. All right? So everyone says I love you when she was young. Right? Mars
right.
Attacks.
Right.
Phantom Menace.
Right.
Where the Heart Is. Zoolander. So not a ton of movies where she has a...
They're all Hollywood sets. Like, they're all she was working within the system. You know, I mean, The Professional was probably, you know, a little bit of a different atmosphere, but that was a long time before this.
So check out right after, eight. Immediately after Attack of the Clones.
Oh, okay.
For Portman, still on Portman. Cold Mountain, Garden State, Closer, and then Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
So these are high drama films.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, in Revenge of the Sith, she seems to bring a little more to the ball game, but I wonder if it's... I would love to know what's happening behind the scenes. Are these people getting frustrated, or do they just not care? Or is it lack of experience to say, you know, grow a pair and say, listen, you're not doing your job very well?
Yeah. I think it's still the latter. I think it's being in an atmosphere where, you know, the material, you rise to the material, and you're given decent material and you're protected, and people are telling you that, you know, you're doing a good job. I feel like there's a more insular kind of coddled, you know, way of acting on a Hollywood set. I'm speaking from zero experience right now. But I feel like there's probably more of a coddled experience on a Hollywood set than what Ewan McGregor was raised in, you know, when he's working with Danny Boyle and Todd Haynes early in his career, and just, you know, working on an independent set or you know, in some like dingy Scottish production in the early or mid 90s. I feel like that's where nobody's going to tell you did that great of a job. Nobody's going to soften your performance. Nobody's going to massage it. It's what you give is what you get. And there's no forgiveness there, you know? And I feel like that's it. I think that Ewan McGregor has probably been in plenty of productions where he looked on the page and said, I don't see a lot here, so I got to come up with something. Whereas Portman and Christensen, I think Christensen came from, like, you know, child acting, if I recall. In Canada. Again, it's probably just, look, there's a bunch of people doing their jobs, really, you know, and it's a system, and I'm a cog in that system, and nothing really relies on me, so I can give whatever I want. It's not, the camera's not looking at me as harshly as it would if I was given, you know, bare material that doesn't play all that great on its own.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not good.
But more importantly, it's really annoying, and it's just like white knuckles, right? When you're watching
it. Yeah, it is. It really is. It's a physical experience to go through this with these actors.
Oh man, and we've speculated and questioned why all of a sudden in Lucas's career, actors don't do a good job anymore. But I think do we agree? He just really didn't care. I think we've discussed in the thread, you know, maybe some more information that we've learned as a group, perhaps that he was pushed into it, didn't want to do it from the beginning. You know, as you said, he didn't, there's on a soundstage, you know, how many directors would kill to go on location? Almost all of them, right? They want to go where they envision this taking place, this story taking place. And to have a director, it's kind of like, it's kind of like a college football coach. You can't be a college football coach if you don't get out on the road and recruit. And I know for me, that would be a miserable experience to be constantly, going out to high schoolers' houses and sucking up to them. Like that would be my worst nightmare. And so therefore, that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't want to be a college football coach. There's many reasons why I wouldn't want to be a director, but you would think that would be one of the ones that would get a director to say, yeah, I'll take this job. You know, I have to go to, you know, what was it on that Project Greenlight where he's like, we need to go to Connecticut to shoot in this house. And they're like, no, you're going down the street in LA to this house that we've already picked out for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if you're willing to pick up and travel, then you've done the work. If you're willing to, you know, go somewhere where there's not, immediate coffee available, I think that's the hard work. And they shot this in Australia. So Lucas was already out, you know, he was away from home and he was away from Skywalker Ranch. So I feel like once you're out there, then just go to the desert too. Like,
oh yeah.
If you're already out of your comfort zone, it doesn't matter how easy, quote unquote, a movie is to make. All movies are still going to be excruciatingly hard to make. So if you're going to do that, then make it count. Like, go out there and sweat, you know? It's like, yeah, it's like if you're going to go for a jog, if you're going to be out in the cold, then suffer. Suffer all the way. Don't suffer 20% and waste your time. And I feel like that's what we're getting.
Lucas doesn't do a whole ton of sweating, but imagine. But, you know, and also I think everything in Australia is like an hour and a half from each other. So, yeah.
I mean, I guess, I don't know.
I agree with you.
It's tough to judge.
On the other side of the world.
But it's just like, look, I don't know. I feel like it just gets into, like, hard work ethos. It's like nobody loves the grueling nature of it, but you know, if you stick through it, then you'll feel better at the end of it. And I feel like he never went 100% with it. There's the really great Red Letter Media commentaries on the prequels, and there's a shot where it shows Lucas like leaving his office after he writes Revenge of the Sith, and he just like plops the script down on the table and is just like, and everybody in the production office kind of like gives like a clap, and they're like, God, I think he's going to be in a better mood tomorrow because he doesn't want to be here. And that's, I think it's just so apparent that there's nobody, he didn't want to be there, and the most enthusiastic people about this were the fans, and that's who he was doing it for. But, you know, if you're not doing it for yourself, then it's probably not worth doing.
And it's hard to speculate who would have been better at directing each one of these movies because the scripts don't work really, especially or the stories at least. The script definitely doesn't work, but the story, I don't think the stories are compelling enough.
Well,
I
feel like this script, it's not great, but I think it's a better structure and a better overall story than Phantom Menace, you know, where I couldn't tell you exactly what the story of that movie is if you ask, but here it's like, well, it's a mystery movie cross-cut with a romance. Oh, great. If you give that to any good director, you know, the dialogue scenes might not, you know, be the deepest things you'll ever get, but it'll work, you know. If you gave this to, like, Ridley Scott at the time, and he would turn you back in some really textural, you know, settings, a love story that certainly would have worked better than this, and then he would have delivered some fantastic, eye-popping action scenes. And that's really all that you really want from a middle-of-the-road Star Wars movie. But when you're not Ridley Scott, then, you know, you don't get those kind of results.
What else do we love about Attack of the Clones?
Well, I'm trying to think. So I do like Ewan McGregor. I think despite the digital nature of everything, I do think the action scenes are fun. in a video game kind of way. And I like that there's that whole gladiator aspect of it at the end. Speaking of Ridley Scott, what do you think about Yoda? Like how did you and your theater react in 2002 whenever Yoda took out the lightsaber and started doing, you know, flips?
I honestly can't remember what my reaction to that specific thing was in a theater in 2002. I'm trying to remember which movies I did see in 2002 in a theater. Gangs of New York comes to mind.
Minority Report was that summer.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Yes.
The Sum of All Fears.
1 hour photo. But I do
the
know
Four Feathers.
I think, as we discussed in the episode 4, I think anything that draws attention to the fact that technology is digressing, or the abilities, or there's discontinuity between what has been established and the films that take place later on the timeline than what is being shown on earlier. I think anything like that that draws attention to that disparity is a problem for me. Okay, so you can say, well, Yoda gets old, so he can't really. Okay, fine. But man, like, it's hard to really express this, because I think those lightsaber fight scenes with Yoda, with Dooku and Palpatine in the next one, those are two of the best lightsaber fights in all of Star Wars to date for me. I don't know, they're just kind of cool. But at the same time, I don't like how Yoda is able to do this. I think if they were able to take that puppet in Empire and have him do more stuff, then maybe so. But I think to be taking this Yoda character who's been established as, like, you know, sort of a Gandhi-esque, or kind of like a very humble, meek Jedi preacher, who doesn't do a whole lot in training Luke, just to be able to go, like, bounce off the walls and, like, just go ape on these guys. It's cool to look at, but at the same time, I feel hypocritical in saying that I don't like how he's able to do that. What about you?
I think I like the scene in Revenge of the Sith. Here, it does feel, I remember being in the theater and actually, like jumping, not like out of, like, jumping for joy, but like jumping out of, like, shock and terror, because there was this row of dudes behind me that, as soon as it happened, were just like, oh, and just like screaming and then cheering. And I, like, looked over my shoulder like somebody just, like, you know, hit me on the back of the head. It was shocking how excited people were for that. And I think, I mean, it was pretty neat being in the theater for that. it's tough. It's tough because I like that idea. I like that the guy that we see in Empire used to be a ninja, basically. But it's like 20 years. Like, and he's supposed to be, what, like 900 years old? So, like, in a 20-year span, what happened? Like, what did he get?
Yeah.
That debilitated him so much.
Yeah, that's a 20-year sweet spot on those creatures' kind of lifespan, where everything just starts to shut down.
It just go fast. I feel like it doesn't have the gravity that even the fight in Revenge of the Sith has. But it's probably the only moment in this movie, other than maybe that Jango Fett Obi-Wan fight, where it's like, I don't know, I feel like the film is really engaged in what's going on, where it's like, okay, this is the moment, you know, this is a moment the battle after that, where you get all these like pop zooms and like little mini Death Stars like dropping, and I feel like that stuff is pretty decent, but I don't know, when you think, when you say, okay, this is going to be the movie where you have, you know, ranks and ranks of, this is your Lord of the Rings, you know, Helm's Deep kind of thing, where you have ranks of Jedi fighting against ranks of, well, that was the same year as this, against, like, ranks of droids, like, and clones and things. It's like, wow, that just thinking about that sounds so awesome. And then to think that this is it. Like, this is the only large-scale kind of Jedi battle that we get. And it's like, oh, well, that's super disappointing. Like, you really wanted something that there's a real, like, I mean, the movies have roots in Kurosawa. So, like, you kind of wanted that, you know, the end of Seven Samurai, or even something as large-scale as Kagemusha or Ron, where you just have these sides just kind of digging into each other and really let a director design a battle scene. The more I talk about it, the more excited I get for something like that, and the more disappointed I get that this was supposed to be that. This was Lucas's idea of a Braveheart-style, you know, Jedi battle, and that's not very exciting.
So you like that scene. Do you feel that it's too derivative of a gladiator scene or something like Helm's Deep? I mean, the setup is obviously different, but it seems so, like, to me it just seems so much, there's so much similarities between this and other things we've seen, you know, a crowd looking on to people about to get executed, and then, I don't know.
No, I feel like that's something that works so well in movies, and, I mean, they did it in John Carter. I feel like that's one of the best scenes in that movie. I'm a fan of Gladiator and Spartacus and sword and sandal movies, and I feel like it if anything, it's not derivative enough. Like, it looks like one of those things, you know, filmed in the shooting style of a sitcom, where it's just this distance and not very dynamic, and that's that's what's frustrating about it, is that it's not that it looks too much like a movie I like. It doesn't look enough like one of those movies. If it was a carbon copy of something, I would be much happier than what we get, which is just in concept a copy of it, but in execution, a really just vanilla delivery of that idea.
What do you think about the character of Jango Fett?
I don't think about
his
character much. He looks awesome. You know, I mean, the Boba Fett Jace suit is pretty awesome. But that's about it. I mean, I guess I like. I mean, I guess he's so sympathetic because he allows himself to be cloned, but then I guess out of a sense of just paternity or something, paternal instinct, he decides to keep a clone as his son, which is, I think, you know, which is a character choice, and it's interesting, but we don't know why, and it doesn't really go anywhere other than to let him get his head lobbed off. I don't know. The character-wise, not much there. I think the shot of baby Boba Fett holding his dad's head is pretty shocking and kind of awesome in its own kind of Conan the Barbarian way. But again, it's cut between C-3PO getting his head chopped off and kind of goofing around. And it's just, it's one of those things where if you took that single thing and extrapolated it into a full story arc, you might get something really nice, but nobody is going to commit to that.
Yeah, it to me, with it sort of is like a lot of other little tidbits here and there that try to connect to the original trilogy, in that you're saying, oh, well, let's explain what Boba Fett is, and so he's a clone that the original design of the clones decided to keep as a son for his own. Okay, so the original guy that all these troopers are cloned after kept one and trained him himself, so we've got Boba Fett. Okay, that's kind of cool, but it's one of many things that Lucas decides to, you know, shed light on in an odd way, just sort of explain, you know, you're finding yourself all these origin stories that you need to create to explain what's already there, one, I don't think it's necessary for all these to be there. And two, it really feels like it could have been like shined up a little bit. It feels way too forced, but and not necessarily the Boba Fett one, but this one's just one of many things that I find in these prequels that you feel like just thrown together and like saying, see?
Yeah, exactly. See? Yeah, there's five people in this universe and they all know each other and all their parents knew each other. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's two instincts there that I think bug me. A, the idea that the stormtroopers aren't individuals, which I think which makes Star Wars, the original, so fun, is that, you know, they seem like soldiers, you know, that are kind of messing up or doing their jobs or, you know, there's things at stake because they're individuals. But now we know that apparently they're all just the same guy. And then that makes the Empire like 10 evil guys with an army of mindless clones. Whereas before it was this whole nation of kind of people with messed up motivations.
Yeah.
That's way more interesting and dramatic.
Volunteers of people that want to help fight or
yeah,
maybe they're forced to help fight or.
Yeah,
or
exactly. That's so much more dramatic.
But instead, because their armor looks alike, hey, let's just all have their bodies look alike.
Yeah.
You see how easy that is?
So when they die or when the heroes kill them or anything like that, it doesn't really matter. They're not really hurting human. It's like they're hurting sand people.
But let's murder a bunch of kids.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because that needs to be, we can't soften that at all. Yeah, that and then the general kind of idea that any of us want to see the badass helmeted, you know, villains of the original trilogy be shown as kids. I mean, Darth Vader, we don't really want to see him as a kid, and Boba Fett, we don't really want to see him as a kid. Like, why can't they just be mysterious cool guys in masks?
Yeah, is this what kind of started the whole we don't need an origin story of every bad guy, or did that whole thing exist before Phantom Menace? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I mean, I think this probably had a lot to do with that. Because I remember people being pretty interested in Phantom Menace and the idea that, oh wow, we get to see, you know, what Darth Vader looked like without the mask and what made him so evil. And it wasn't until we got this that we thought, oh, I don't care what made him that evil, really. He's the boogeyman, you know. There's something inherently scary, and the less you know, the scarier it is, and that's okay.
Yeah, I want him to have like a little kid Darth Vader suit. Like, you know, he's in that thing his whole life.
Yeah, he just fell in some lava as an infant, and that's why he's evil.
And he has to get a bigger suit, like, every few months, because he's growing.
Yeah, because his grafts and stuff would grow, and it would, like, be super painful.
Yeah,
see, better prequel already. Just the horror, basically the diving bell and the butterfly, but with a child.
Oh, what a great start to the day.
Good morning.
Good thought. Okay. Good thought.
Well, I mean, on that note, I mean, this movie has taken us to that place. So is there anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up?
That would be without that really poignant shaving scene, too, though, because kids don't need to shave. So with the guy helping, you know, Max Von shave. Oh, wait, but he was – that's not true, because he would have been the one in the wheelchair. Okay, never mind.
I'm just kind of standing here.
Are we still recording?
I'm sorry,
you
said but
cut,
we are.
Right?
I'm really sorry, but this is all in. This is all in. Okay. Well, it sounds like we're tapped out on Attack of the Clones. I guess I'll go back to where I started. Do you like this more or less than The Phantom Menace? I know it's probably been a while since you've put yourself through Episode One.
Yeah. No, I like it less. I agree with that.
Okay. This is your least favorite.
Yeah, this is my least favorite, and Phantom would be my second least.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's just so boring. It's just, to me, there's just nothing. Part of it could work, but it doesn't. None of it does. So you talk about the Obi-Wan stuff with the investigation, but with the other side of the coin, the romantic side being so bleak, so just bare and bad, it really doesn't help Obi-Wan's side, really, for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do get that great scene where Obi-Wan sees Dex, the big four-armed chef with the mustache.
Yeah.
He's like this giant reptile, monster, but then he has a diner, chef mustache.
Is he riding a bicycle with like a giant front wheel and a tiny back wheel?
He's got baggy jeans. Oh, God. Okay.
It's a Bulgarian.
It's this movie's Watto, is what it is. All right, man.
You wearing one of those like wrestler ear protector things. Okay.
He's lifting weights with like balls at the end where it's not placed.
He's got an anchor tattoo on his right arm.
He does. I'm almost positive that he does. All right, man. Well, we'll leave it at that. Thanks for talking to me about this. And maybe the next time we talk, since I think we've got Revenge of the Sith and Jedi on the horizon, maybe the next time we talk, we'll actually be talking about Episode 7, which is hopefully going to be better than Episode 2.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com. and aspectradioshow.com.